It's about 6:32, and I think we're ready to go. Get ready to go if I can talk. So, as we call this meeting to order, I would like to introduce Mr. Charlie Pedersen with Crossroads Community Church, who is going to open us in prayer. So let's stand, and then after that, we'll do the pledge.
All right, let's pray. Father God, we thank you tonight for these men and women that you've gathered and placed in these positions of service and of leadership. God, I want to pray specifically for them tonight and for their families. We know that leadership and service are not without cost. And so God, I pray that as they serve and as they lead, that you'd give them times of rest with their families. And Lord, we pray that their homes will be places of light and of love. And God, as they make decisions that shape this city, that their homes would also be places of light and love, and this city would be a place of light and love. And so God, as they make decisions, would you give them wisdom? Would you give them understanding? Would this be a place of peaceful discourse that will turn our community more and more into a place of joy, a place of peace, and a place of restoration, and a place of blessing? So God, would your presence be here tonight? It's in the name of Jesus that we pray. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, let's start with roll call.
Skog?
Here.
Haverfield?
Here.
Levi?
Here.
Hogaboom?
Here.
Bruner?
Here.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
So we have a couple proposed amendments to the agenda tonight, and one is that item 15 is no longer postponed. It will be on the agenda, and then we will be postponing item number 29, which is an award bid and authorizing mayor to sign a contract for the FY18 storm drain repair Zone B. So with that, we'll move to the consent.
Mayor Crane, fellow councilman, I'd like to add one more item to the proposed agenda for this evening. And that's a motion for discussion by City Council and Mayor on the new NDC Commissioner selection process.
I'll second that.
Were we just talking about that in our processes? Are we allowed to add something to the agenda tonight when it hasn't been noticed?
Madam Mayor, according to the training we just received from
Mr. McNall
from ICRIM. It is a difficult process from the Idaho Code to determine how a council can properly, without violating the open meetings law, call for a meeting. The law says three or more council members can add something to the agenda, but communicating between three or more council members outside of this setting is difficult to do without violating the law. And so his recommendation was that actually that there now an item can be placed on the agenda, particularly for council communication such as this, but yes, an item can be added
to a future agenda. But help me understand the notification process, that there's a notification that has to take place. Am I incorrect in that? And if I am, that's fine.
Well, in the way he phrased it, his recommendation was that a discussion could occur about adding the item to a future agenda so that it can be discussed more fully.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm not sure where that leads us for this agenda item, because I think what I understood was a future agenda item, yes, but I'm not sure about adding, and this is strictly a process call. I don't know.
And Councilman Haverfield, could you repeat your motion? Yes.
A motion to add a discussion item by council and mayor on the new NDC commissioner selection process. Now, I did receive, from Mark, his interpretation of what the state statutes speak about NDC replacement, and it is by council, it's not by the NDC commission, so the process has been that the mayor's office sent out a notice, and for us to be able to talk about the information that he provided to us, it has to be in a council meeting like this. We can't speak to him individually or collectively outside of this body.
To speak to him?
To speak about this item and discuss it.
Because the motion was calling for a discussion about the procedure, I believe that could happen In terms of when can we make a decision, a decision should not be made tonight regarding the candidate, but I think a discussion about how the body will arrive at that decision, bearing in mind the relative roles of the council and mayor, could appropriately occur at this meeting.
So recognizing there is no vote on anything tonight, it's a discussion purposes only?
Absolutely.
That's correct. That's my intent.
Okay. So added to the agenda.
So do we need to vote on that? Or do you just that as a vote, I suppose?
I think so. I don't think it requires a vote. Does it require a vote to add that to the agenda?
Well, and we do have a motion and a second. It could be approved by the council. And do we have any further? We had a couple of amendments, I believe, also. Mm-hmm. Were they approved yet? Did that vote occur? Not yet. I would recommend simply when you make a motion to approve all of those, include this amendment among them.
Would you like to change your motion, Randy, that we approve all of the amendments to the agenda?
Yeah, I'll make a motion to approve the agenda with two changes that you had mentioned and then adding the motion about a discussion on the NDC commissioner selection process.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, and then moving to our consent agenda. We have a number of items on that.
Make a motion to approve the consent agenda as written unless there's changes necessary by staff.
So moved.
Any discussion? If none, roll call.
Skog?
Yes.
Levi?
Yes.
Bruner?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Hogebaum?
Yes.
Haverfield?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay, so this is the time on the agenda that we have the opportunity to anyone wishing to speak on an agenda item or non-agenda item. So let's start with agenda items. Is there anyone wishing to speak on an agenda item? Not seeing anyone that's wishing to speak on an agenda item. Is there anyone wishing to speak on a non-agenda item? Okay, so we have a couple, so we'll start here. So when you come forward, we're going to have 3 minutes each, and please state your name and your item and address.
Mayor, City Council, my name is Robert Hall, 643 Queens Drive. And what brings me here tonight is I sold a house in September, and there were two charges for water that went to the city of Nampa on my closing statement. But what I'm finding out is there's two separate bills. There's a irrigation and a water bill for domestic water. So I ignored the domestic water bill thinking that it was paid because I had proof of it. Come to find out it wasn't. And the purpose for my being here today is that the city has contracted with a company called CBI, or Credit, I believe it's Credit Bureau Incorporated. And they add a 33% fee to all utility bills. So if you owe $1,000, you'll have a $330 fee in addition to the principal you owe. So what brings me here is just to let you know that I've decided, because of the 33% fee, I owe the city of Nampa $120, but the Credit Bureau Incorporated wants $162. And because of this fee, I just wanted to make this council aware that this fee exists and that because of that, I'm not going to be paying the bill. And that got me to thinking about the revenue that the city of Nampa loses because of this fee. It's non-negotiable. There could be hundreds, maybe thousands of people like me that decide not to pay. So the revenue that's lost is substantial. So My question is, this particular credit bureau has been representing the city of Nampa for over 34 years, and I'd like to know why we don't send it out for bid or look for other credit bureaus that might be better for the citizens of Nampa. So that was my question to the council. I don't know if there's an answer.
Mayor, may I ask him a question? Just curious, did you have a communication with anybody from the credit bureau?
Both sides, both the utility billing and the credit bureau, and it's non-negotiable. And I thought I had a special circumstance because I thought it was paid. I've got proof. I'm just not refusing to pay, but I am refusing to pay the fee. So it looks like there's over 20 collection agencies in the valley, and I don't know why we're continuing to do business with one company. I don't know what arrangement we have or why it's never put out for bid. So that's my purpose for being here. I don't know if I'll get an answer tonight or if I could maybe have someone follow up and give me a
response. Mr. Hall, we will follow up with you, and I appreciate you bringing this forward this evening. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Excuse me, Mayor, did you give Mr. Hall's address?
Yes.
What is it, please?
648 Queens Drive.
It's 643.
643, I'm sorry.
I have a post office box that all the mail goes to. It's P.O. Box 1256 in Eagle.
Do you live at this residence, sir?
What's that?
Do you live at this residence?
643, yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Patrick?
Mayor and Council, good evening. I just have a couple items I wanted to bring up that aren't on the agenda. It'll be brief. The first item is House Bill 547 at the state legislature. This is a bill which the change would prevent local jurisdictions from adopting local amendments to state-adopted building codes that are necessary to perform day-to-day operations. The reason for this is the bill is backed by the Idaho Home Builders Association in an effort to keep the current 2012 residential code and 2009 residential energy code for residences. They would like to keep that static, so this is a bill they've been promoting. But it has unintended consequences because we have 26 amendments to Chapter 1 of the adopted residential and building code that the state adopts just to adopt our fees, to how we either appoint or hire a building official, how we do our day-to-day, how we do refunds, etc. And so we also need the ability left open to adopt code appendix sections that would cover more detail for installation of spas, patio covers, more detailed requirements for what we need for signs rather than just having these open structural requirements. We'd like to drill down into what's really necessary and not have to have sign companies develop too much structural for what they need, just the bare minimum. We also have flood-resistant construction provisions in our buildings, which change the provisions of the building codes substantially to meet what our flood administrator and our flood administration program does. So anyway, the bill's passed the House. It's going to be heard at the Senate Commerce and Human Resources Committee sometime this week. And I just want to let you know I intend to testify at that hearing and would ask that you contact your senator to vote in opposition to this bill in case it gets out of the Senate committee and to the Senate floor. And I'll be brief on the second item. The second item involves, I just want to bring everybody up to speed on how we handle dangerous buildings and code complaints for existing buildings. We received a complaint from Councilman Rodriguez last week. We're looking into that. We'll get you an update on that. But I wanted to let everybody know that from time to time you'll have a constituent contact you about, hey, there's this building, it looks like it's going to fall in, or it looks like it's patently unsafe. And I want to let you know that there's several departments that work on this issue. It's the building department, fire, police. A lot of times will refer something, or animal control will refer something to this when they first go to a house. It could be fire going first. And we're going to be meeting in April to really, we have some best practices in place, but they're really word of mouth. It's not really written down other than what's in our ordinances. So what we're going to do is we're going to come up with some flow charts on, if it's this situation, then this is who carries the ball, and this is who's contacting. This is how we take the case from complaint to resolution. So I'll come back to you probably late April, early May, and let you know about that. In the interim, I have a handout for you that just basically outlines a few of the departments, what the types of public nuisances are, how each of us handles them, either through the court system or through a notice system and bring it to resolution. If you have any questions, feel free to call me. So with that, I'll hand these out after I stand for questions.
Mayor Kling, Patrick, did you say the bill, House Bill 547, passed already? Was that today?
It passed last week, the House. I testified on Tuesday, and it had its first reading on Wednesday, and it passed on last Thursday and was referred to a Senate committee on commerce.
And when is the Senate vote?
I haven't heard back when that committee meets. I imagine it is going to be scheduled for this week because we're well into March.
Okay, thanks.
So I'll be going, and we'll just have to work with it. And I've already talked to the Senator's office for what we may do. Is some of the things that we'd like to do is we may bring those to you prior to July, some of the little minor tweaks, and I think then we can live for several years to come.
Okay.
So,
thanks.
Patrick, quick question. So this morning we discussed this particular complaint and process. Our current process is that those are received in the mayor's office and then they get disseminated to departments if there's a complaint. But are you wanting that to, is that the process we're going to adhere to until we change?
Mayor and council, if that works for your office, that's great. We also have an assistant building official, Neil Jones, who handles all of our special investigation complaints. That's going out post-fire and posting dangerous building placards to having, you know, renters come in saying, hey, I've got some sparking wires in my apartment, that type of thing. So if you feel like your office may not have
the bandwidth. Currently, we do take all the complaints, and then we disseminate them out to the various departments, and then our office ensures that a follow-up resolution has taken place. They get tracked. And so we're happy to do that so that there is somewhat of a centralized location for complaints to come through. So, but it's, and then we will identify that process further in April, it sounds like.
Mayor and Council, that's correct. So let's go with contact the mayor's office for the interim, and then we will have a set matrix of who you call. Probably have it finished up by May.
Thank you, Patrick.
And I'll just hand these out, maybe to the clerk, and you can get them.
And then I think we have another gentleman here. I just lost your sheet with your name, so I apologize. Come on up.
Okay. My name is Orland Howell. And you may be my former students or as parents had one of my students. I taught at Central School for a number of years in Centennial.
And we might have you come up to the mic because we record this.
Okay.
That way we've got you on there. And so remind us of your name and your address.
1505 West Tamarack Drive. That's about five blocks straight west of West Middle School. Retired teacher. Just a small item of concern. I have a suggestion that we take issue on this. Be it enacted, no political or religious group shall be allowed to proselyte or promote their beliefs, nor be allowed to display nor distribute their propaganda materials inside park or library areas, except on the street sidewalks that are adjacent and nearest to those areas. I don't care about inside the park so much. I do care about the library area. Right now, there's a group there. I don't even know what group it is. I think it's a religion. But anyway, they have set up tripods and have done this for a number of weeks, and they display on little bulletin boards and have their materials and so forth that they try to distribute to the people. These are about 15, 20 feet in front of the doors of the library downtown, and sometimes when it's a little cooler weather, they go inside the little buffer area between the outside door and the doors into the library, and that's not meant to be a meeting area of any kind. It's just meant to help in the temperature control. Now, I'm not suggesting that we make people lose any religious freedoms or desires for their promotion of their activities or their beliefs. I'm simply masking that they move, that we have a resolution that they move about 50 feet to the sidewalk area opposite the Pix Theater, across the street from the Pix Theater, and set up their little tripods and their displays and so forth there. They can get all the traffic from that area there. Because the library should not have a distraction like this. Library is a place of peace and contentment. A little, the reason they're allowed to do this, a little grassy area right in front of the library there, it's only about 20 feet by, I'd say, 60, 70 feet, is considered a park. It's a little bit of a stretch to have it as a park. But anyway, they're allowed to be there because it's a park. I'm not suggesting that they be moved from the area, made to be forced out of the area. I'm simply making a suggestion that they move to the area I described across from the Pix Theater on the sidewalk along the street. That way they won't be in front of the doors. Lots of times they'll be standing by the front doors. Sometimes they'll be standing with their placards and their tripods in front of the little grassy area. And so that it's just simply a suggestion that they move about 50 feet to the right or to the, let's see, that'd be to the south. So that's all it is. It's not an effort to make anybody lose any religious or political freedom, but it's not a good place. It's just out of place. Stop and think for a minute. If every political group or every religion, let's think of all the number of Nazarenes and Mormons in this town. If they all, the individual congregation, sent two people there and put up their placards, you wouldn't even be able to get into the library. So this is not a good place for that. It's out of place. I simply want them to move, and that's all I want that.
Mr. Howell, thank you for coming tonight. Thank you for sharing. So we've got about 5 minutes before a public hearing, and Michael, I was wondering, would you mind if we switch and let Vicki go first? That way, if I, Bailey, is here, can go home so that they don't have to wait. Is that okay with you?
Fine.
Okay, Vicki?
Mayor and Council, I'm happy to introduce Morgan Browning. He is the one who has done the work on gathering the material for the presentation of the audit, and so he's here tonight to answer every one of your questions after you've thoroughly studied the report.
Point that to me, of course.
Good evening, Mayor and City Council. My name is Martin Browning. I'm an audit manager with Hyde Bailey. I was the audit manager assigned to the fiscal year 2017 audit. I'm here this evening to present the results of that audit. We issue three reports, and my plan is to go over those reports, the objectives of those reports, the results, and then open it up to any questions that you have. So the first report that I'm going to go through is on pages 9 through 11. It's the independent auditor's report. Our primary objective is to render an opinion on the accuracy and reliability of the city's comprehensive annual financial report. That is this document that has been prepared for you. And we accumulate sufficient and appropriate audit evidence. Based on the evidence that we obtain, we render an opinion. So this report talks about the scope of our work, the limitations of our work, and it also renders an opinion. The opinion is expressed on page 10 of that report. And the opinion that we're rendering on the City of Nampa's financial statements is called an unmodified opinion. So in layman's term, it's a clean opinion. It's the highest level of assurance that you can receive in an audit. And what that means is we were able, through the course of our audit, to accumulate sufficient and appropriate audit evidence to determine that the numbers reported in this CAFR are materially correct. I believe that was the opinion received in previous years as well. And that's the opinion we're receiving this year. So the other paragraphs, they discuss our limitations. The CAFR is a pretty big document, and we don't give the same level of assurance on every page, and so that's what these paragraphs are discussing. And the last paragraph refers to the second report that I'm going to talk to you about. It's a report on internal control over financial reporting and on compliance. And that report is on pages 140 through 141 of the city's CAFR. So if you want to turn there, you can. So the objective of this report is different. We don't render an opinion on the adequacy and sufficiency of your internal controls. We evaluate your internal controls as part of the planning process of our audit. And if we see deficiencies in internal controls through our tests, through our interviews with city personnel in the various departments, then this report would refer to such deficiencies. And it also talks about compliance and other matters. We look at grants and contracts that could, non-compliance of which could have a material impact on the city's financial statements as well. So for fiscal year 2017, I'm happy to report to you that the city has no findings with respect to internal controls over financial reporting and no instances of non-compliance that were from grants or contracts as well. So you're able to perform our procedures and we do not detect any deficiencies. That's good news. The third report is a report on compliance for each major federal program. So since the city spends more than $750,000 in federal grant monies, we're required to test major federal programs. And if you want to back up a couple pages, the city's required on pages 136 through 138 to report a schedule of expenditures of federal awards. And what we do as auditors is we determine which programs to test through a risk-based approach and evaluation that includes qualitative and quantitative factors. On page 144, there is a kind of a snapshot of what we tested and the results of the audit. We tested the CDBG program, Community Development Block Grant Program, and we also tested the Assistance to Firefighters grants. And the objective of this report that I'm discussing with you is to render an opinion on your compliance with those federal programs in terms of what the compliance supplements require, in terms of what the grantors require as well. So this evening I'm happy to report to you that we are expressing an unmodified opinion on your compliance with those federal programs. So that's a clean opinion. That's the highest level of assurance. We were able to do our compliance test, and we were able to obtain sufficient and appropriate evidence that you complied with the compliance requirements in that program. We also evaluate your controls over compliance. So when I say compliance, I'm talking about reporting, programmatic type things, looking at environmental quality control reviews for the CDBG program, for example, stuff that may or may not be financial in nature, allowable cost and that sort of thing. So we evaluate those controls, and if we detect deficiencies either through our procedures, we report those. So we do have one deficiency to report to you, and that deficiency is on page 145. And it pertains to the CDBG program's reporting to HUD. We look at the annual reports you file with HUD. We look at the content of those reports. We look at the accuracy of them and the timeliness of the submission to federal grantors. And in this instance, we found discrepancies where you reported a number to HUD, and based on review of accounting records, the number should have been different. So we've got about $100,000 discrepancy between what you reported to HUD and the actual expenditures for that program. And so it's about $100,000 difference, and we're reporting this finding. It's considered to be a significant deficiency. Now, findings can have varying levels of severity. You could have material noncompliance, you could have material weaknesses, and this is the lowest tier. So this is the less severe of all the findings, the significant deficiency. So that's referred to in our report, and it's also detailed here. And the city was required to prepare a corrective action plan. You don't see that here in this CAFR, but they did prepare one, and in that they prepared a detailed response on corrective action. And I think what happened here is a key personnel in the CDBG program turned over, and so for that reason, the report wasn't reviewed, and you know, so I think it's just more of a timing issue, and if we had performed these procedures and that person was here, we probably would have not seen any problems at all. So with that said, I'm going to just open it up to whatever questions that you have, either on the audit or the CAFR itself. You know, do my best to answer whatever questions you have.
Yes, let's see, Morgan, right?
Yes.
Okay, one of the things I did was going to ask, you just mentioned that what I was going to ask you, was the difference between the amount reported was $343,745, but the actual amount was $441,526. That's on page 145.
Right.
So why was that difference? I mean, did we lose $100,000? Did we... Was that 100,000 somewhere else in this report? Because I didn't, sure didn't understand it, where it was.
Well, we try to determine the exact difference of and what it related to, and I don't have my work in front of me, but we couldn't really isolate it to a specific voucher that wasn't included, or an expenditure, you know, or a set of a group of expenditures that weren't reported. I think at one point the CDBG report was in draft form, and there could have been more FY17 bills processed after. It could have been a timing thing. And generally, the report is filed in November, I think. And for fiscal year 2017, and so the book should really be closed and everything, and there's a review process that happens. But there's a $100,000 discrepancy there between, you know, the general ledger and that report that was filed. And we really couldn't nail it down in terms of what it was. We just noted, well, it doesn't seem like this was reviewed, and we're off, and that's pretty much where the audit ended.
Yeah, and I think my concern was, did the city of Nampa take a $100,000 loss? That's what I was thinking at first. And it doesn't appear that's the case. It just by the time of the, right?
This objective pertains to accuracy in reporting. So there wasn't a loss, or there's not any missing money or anything like that. They just have to file reports with HUD, and they have to detail what they spent. And so it's not a case where we found missing money or a loss or anything like that. It's just a reporting discrepancy is what it is.
And what I did with going over these numbers, I'm sorry, guys, I did read it yesterday. What I went over is I couldn't find that number anywhere else in your auditor's report. So
right.
And those numbers confused me, boy, let me tell you. But I did not locate that somewhere else. So maybe that's what you're referring to, is timing of closure and other circumstances.
Right. So yeah, the CDBG program had about 600 and some thousand reported. That's reported on page 136, 634,000 total expenditures. And, you know, the required amount we're saying is 441,000. There are some that are construction related that aren't required to be included in the report that's file in HUD for our review of the compliance supplement, and when we're talking with HUD people on their end. So there are discrepancies here between the numbers and the finding and the numbers and the CEQA. But I guess it'd be hard to, I don't think you could reconcile this to the other numbers that are in the audit, the financial statements.
Okay.
But it because it's reporting to HUD. But we do review that in terms of here's what the general ledger says, you know, here's what the city's accounting system says, and here's what was reported. So we do audit with that mindset. It just doesn't reconcile back to that.
And I'm thinking that the CDBG program has more money to deal with besides that. So I'm just throwing it out. I just wanted to understand that.
Great.
Thank you, sir.
Vicki, would you like to say something?
Right, Mayor, thank you for seeing how I'm jumping in here. Mayor and Council, that discrepancy has been resolved since the audit was closed, though, and the reports have been revised that have been done with the Idaho program as well as with HUD, so it was a timing issue and was due primarily to the turnover in personnel that it wasn't resolved earlier. Couldn't go back with the auditors.
Okay.
Okay. We didn't lose the money.
You couldn't put it on the report because the report had already been.
Right. He was already done.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Are there any other questions? With that, I don't see that this requires a vote. Is that correct? So thank you for providing the report.
You're welcome.
We appreciate your work.
Thank you.
Okay, so it is a few minutes after 7, and 7 is when we step into our public hearing. We have two public hearings this evening. Our first public hearing is a vacation of right-of-way for Barber Street, adjacent Jackson's Food Stores at 612 Northside Boulevard, and on the east side of Northside Boulevard, south of I-84, with a BC and ILRS zoning districts. The applicants own multiple parcels on both sides of the existing Barbara Street right-of-way and propose demolishing the existing store and fuel canopies, constructing a new store and fuel canopies located further away from Northside Boulevard, as well as street improvements in the existing unopened and street right-of-way for Aspen Engineers, representing Jackson's Food Stores. So we will start with the applicant.
Thank you very much. For the record, my name is Lance Warnick from Aspen Engineers. My business address is 485 West Main in CUNA. Home address is 7312 Wild Horse Way in Nampa, 83686. Here tonight on behalf of Jackson's to introduce the project and see if you have any specific questions. I'm going to direct your attention over to the item that Norm has put on the screen. In general, if you've driven up Northside lately, you've already seen that Jackson's has torn down the existing store. That store has been up close to the street, been there for a long time. Their desire is to build a larger store. They'll have fuel canopies, primarily for passenger cars and trucks, that will be on the west side of the store. And on the east side of the store, have a larger fueling area for the diesel and the larger trucks. The existing right-of-way for Barber Street essentially acts as a parking lot right now for Jackson's. There's not curb, gutter, sidewalk. It's you couldn't drive through it and tell it's actually a public street. And so part of what they're trying to do is just to clean that up. You know, since they're not essentially being used as a public street, just make it part of the property. What that will allow them to do on that hatched area that you see on the exhibit, on the far west side of that hatched area, they'd actually be able to put a little larger fuel canopy in. That fuel canopy for the diesel area trucks will extend probably about 10 or 15 feet into that existing right-of-way. And it just improves circulation by being able to do that. As indicated, do you have a laser pointer? Thank you, Mike. You know, and this was the area that we're talking about for that fuel canopy. And right now there are a couple of parcels that, you know, theoretically that is their access. So what Jackson's proposing to do is actually construct a road in this unopened right-of-way, meaning that it exists, it's owned by the city, but there's no street improvements in place. There's gravel driveways from property, just a field. And they would essentially build a paved road that would connect down to Carroll Street and improve improvements out to 6th. So the proposal actually provides better access along that easterly side, great circulation. You have letters in your packets from the utility companies. Some of them have utilities in place. They're supportive of the vacation just as long as there's an easement kept in place over the portions of the right-of-way that contains their facilities, and we will definitely work with them as that moves forward. It does not appear that any of those conflict with location of that diesel fuel canopy. But again, just to reiterate, we would essentially abandon Barber Street from Ann down to the alley and then be building those improvements down to there, so no access is essentially lost. And that's with that, I just stand for any specific questions.
Mayor Kling, Lance, so the improvements that will be on 6th Street, they will just go to where Barbara is being basically taken away? Or is it continuing on all the way to Anstra? Or it,
I'm going to put just on your screen here an item that's already in your packet. Yeah, that works. So, Mayor, members of the council, Randy, so essentially we're talking about is there's currently pavement from 6th Street, which is located right here, and pavement goes around here to Carroll. So what we're talking about is putting pavement all the way down through here. None of this is opened up at this time. We do anticipate having additional traffic and impact so that this area right here, the section of Carroll Street between 6th and Ann, that would be repaved.
Are we talking curb and gutter or just pavement?
Excellent question. The proposal is adjacent to the Jackson's property. That would be curb, gutter, and sidewalk. Adjacent to this property, it would just simply be a rolled curb just to deal with runoff because we're creating a new drainage feature and we need to get that up there. On the opposite side of the street, there would be 12 feet of pavement and a borrow ditch. The borrow ditch would essentially manage the stormwater. Then anticipate that as that adjoining property develops, they would do whatever street improvements are required as part of that site development. And then in this section right here, there would not be curb and gutter placed. It would essentially be, and part of that is to try to preserve access to the existing daycare that's there. So we'd simply just cut the pavement, match what's in place, the existing drainage would follow historical flow. On the opposite side of the street, they would have, again, pavement, and as that parcel develops, they would put in the curb, gutter, and sidewalk as required, which is pretty common. You know, you develop what's adjacent to you, and then when your site develops, you do whatever improvements are required.
So the section of road frontage there, right above where it says 6th Street, that section, that triangular, that rectangular piece of ground, is that owned by Jackson's as well? No.
No, Jackson's property currently stops right here.
Okay.
This is owned by the Ertl Trust, and there's a few homes that are in place. There is a daycare there that's also owned by the Ertl Trust, and then there are essentially two other property owners on the other side.
So further to the west there, where Barbara Street.
Yeah, Jackson's essentially owns all of this out to the alley.
Okay, so the vacation of the easement, half of the is a portion of that going to the property owner then that's to the southeast?
If we can go, Norm, if we can go back to the other exhibit here. Along this portion that's shaded here, Jackson's owns everything on both sides of the street.
Okay.
So so on this section, half that would go one way, half that would go the other. Here we're proposing it all going this direction, just to kind of clean up where that parcel is.
Thanks, Lance.
Are there any other questions for Lance at this time? Thank you. We'll go to staff report.
I think Mr. Warnick has explained this vacation request as clearly as we've described it in the staff report. Staff recommends approval, subject to the conditions that are listed there, meeting the requirements of the engineering division, as well as the interests of the utility companies that have attached letters in the vacation procedure, and also complying with their commitment to complete the paving that has been just described here on the street that will take access to those properties that formerly will use the vacated area now, or the proposed to be vacated area. Any questions?
Okay, if there are no questions, this is a public hearing and it's an opportunity for someone to speak. That said, I had two people written down to support this. One was Ormond Howell that spoke earlier. Ormond, are you still here? No. And then Lance, of course, spoke. I don't have anyone signed up to speak against. Is there anyone that had intended to speak on this that did not sign up or that would like to speak on this? If none, I would stand for a motion to close public hearing.
Mayor, I move that we close public hearing.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Okay, that said, there's an opportunity for Lance, if you have anything further to say. Any further council discussion?
Mayor Kling, I'm ready to make a motion.
Okay.
I would make a motion to approve the vacation as presented to us with the recommended conditions of approval in the staff report.
Second.
Roll call.
Scott?
Well, let me pause. Were there any other discussion? I'm sorry. Any further? Okay. Thank you.
Skog?
Yes.
Levi?
Yes.
Bruner?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Hogeboom?
Yes.
Haverfield?
Yes.
Okay. The next item on our public forum agenda is the vacation of easement located on a portion of 16828 North Marketplace Boulevard, being Lot 4, Block 1 of Treasure Valley Crossing Subdivision, within a BC zoning district west of North Midland Boulevard and on the north side of North Marketplace Boulevard. The easement to be vacated is located on the south side of the sewer easement adjacent to the north property line and comprises of a 26.7 foot by 20 foot by 25.99 feet by 20 foot area for Agree Realty representing LK Nampa II LLC. Is the applicant with us?
Good evening, Mayor and Council. My name is Nathan Cleaver. I'm with Keller Associates. Home address is 965 West Mollywood Drive here in Nampa. I'm representing Agree Realty today, not Agree, even though they like to agree. This project has been 14 years of my life between the Costco Target Shopping Center and then Treasure Valley Crossing Shopping Center. The very last parcel of the subdivision is being developed. I'm not sure if you're aware, but Burlington is moving out of the Karcher Mall and is moving to this parcel. Back in 2005, when I did the design for this, and I was really thoughtful, thinking where all these parcels would go, and I came up with this exhibit. Okay, the area circled there is the portion we're talking about. It's this little stub. That little portion right there. We had planned multiple strip retail back in 05. That did not materialize. Subsequently, we have the Burlington pad, where that water line protrudes about 4 feet into the pad and the easement as well. And with that, we would ask that the easement for that water line basically gets realigned to the remainder of the easement corridor. And so this little square would be deleted. With that, is there any questions?
Mayor Kling, the only question I have then, is that where your stub is going to be for access for the main system?
No, it is not. Stub for access is coming off of this corner right here.
Okay, so you still have an easement there as far as access to the main system, it's just not at the other location?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any other questions? If not, thank you. And staff report. Norm.
Again, this is pretty straightforward. I look at this as kind of a cleanup type action myself. Very small area. You're only talking about 520 square feet of land, and there is adequate easement remaining there to facilitate the development for the store, and so there's not been anybody concerned about this except the developer of the store, so I think it makes sense to allow the vacation to take place as requested with the condition recommended by engineering regarding the abandonment and utilities and stubs in the area.
Are there any questions for Norm? Okay, if not, this is a public hearing, and we only have one person signed up, and that is Nathan, who just spoke. So. So we have no one signed up to against this. Is there anyone here that intended to speak to this issue tonight? If not,
I'll make the motion.
Thank you.
Close public hearing.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. So, Michael, did you have any questions or anything you needed to clarify?
Just clarifying with the app.
Okay. Are there any further questions or discussions from council on this particular issue? Yes, Michael?
Sorry. So what I was communicating with the applicant is that the line, the water line, it's not in the staff report, but the water line that's in that easement needs to be abandoned beyond the easement. Otherwise, we're going to have a public main in a now private property. So the abandonment needs to be, the existing line needs to be abandoned. And that's not in the staff report. It's just
right. It's in the engineering condition.
So anyway.
Okay, so in this memorandum, it does say the engineering division has no concerns, however, except with the following condition, that the owners abandon any public utility subservice line that exists within the easement in accordance with city or the utility companies. So is that sufficient?
That'll work.
That if our motion includes that in the following condition, we've got it?
Yeah.
Okay. So what is the will of the council?
Mayor, fellow council members, make the motion that we approve the vacation of easement as presented with the condition that is in the report.
Second.
Any discussion? Roll call.
Levi?
Yes.
Hogaboam?
Yes.
Bruner?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Haverfield?
Yes.
Skog?
Yes.
And done. Okay, so we're going to go back to towards the top of our agenda, and it is time now for the staff report by Michael Pierce.
Mayor and Council, not a whole lot on this one other than the routine things, stuff that you've seen before. Snow report, we were out a couple of times between this meeting and the last meeting, so fortunately, no major plow work, and we've spent a little bit more salt. Still got a giant plow. Though we're ready for, if it comes this year or next. The other thing I wanted to report is our wastewater program. Our phase one improvements, still working on group A. We are 90% complete of our contract time and 94% of the work's done. So this has been something that we've been working on since June of 15. Seems like it keeps coming. We're still waiting on that last major pump to come in. So we'll probably be still working on that one for a bit of time. We also give you a little bit of report on some of the cleanups. Mostly as you get out there on our group ones is cleanup. And the other thing, we are installing the last of the important things, or the air items, the diffusers in our aeration basin. Those are complete, and so now we're just trying to wrap up group A and group B, salt handling. Tremendous amount of work happened this winter. Fortunately, the weather was fabulous. So the time, I think standing out there on the job site certainly doesn't reflect the time. It says time's complete at 39%, work's complete at 31%, but certainly the building's up, one major piece of equipment's in, we have more on its way, and I guess what I would report is that we're doing pretty good out there for A and B now, working on C. Any questions, comments? Got some pictures.
Sarah Klein, Michael, the only question I would have as far as on the project group A, change order rate at 11.9%, is that acceptable to you? Or is that a little bit high? What were you originally targeting, 5 to 10?
Mayor, Council Haverfield, great observation. We reported a couple of times back to Council previously. We have two significant ones that were, I guess, beyond the scope of what we typically see in a change order. One, when we're working around a plant that was built in 1980, an air pipe it's probably 3 foot in diameter, that handles air, seemed like it was a non-issue. When we got next to it, we were noticing that the dust around the pipe was blowing around. We found a major leak in that. So we had to replace a substantial amount of air piping that was not in the original scope. Some of the things you see in the opening. The other major thing that we found in our facility planning process, we've been forecasting growth and those types of things. When we built the pump station, the primary pump station, primary effluent pump station. We had purchased three major pumps at the time of the project. Going through the entire facility plan, we identified that with the growth, in order to maintain capacity, we needed the fourth pump. So we issued a change order with the contractor while it's still on site to deliver that pump. That was about $650,000, a substantial issue. But with that, it takes away flow as a capacity constraint on the plant. So it's built for five. We had a space for it. It was waiting. We knew it would need to come. But some of the conditions that we evaluated in our facility plan identified the need for it now. So we brought that before council some time ago. It is on order. It's one of those long lead things that takes months and months to get.
So per your understanding, most of these change orders are value added to the project?
Yeah, owner-directed things. There's regarding project specific, to mess up some minor things, very, very, very small, even, I don't know, I don't want to put a percentage on, but very small on that, but quite a few owner-directed. Those are the two major owner-directed changes that are in there. They're both, but I think their piping is approaching $500,000 or something like that. So
thank you, Michael.
Cool.
Any further questions? No, nope. Michael, thank you. So the next section of the agenda in unfinished business is we've got a number of ordinances that we're going to go through, and it's the first reading of ordinances. And so the first one, which is number 14, has been postponed due to lack of supporting documentation. We have a number of these tonight, so we'll just go through them. The second one, item number 15, is the first reading of ordinance for annexation and zoning to RS-22 at 1602 Southside Boulevard for Jason and Angela Richardson. The public hearing was held on the 16th of January. Do we need to read that?
Yep.
Okay.
An order determining that certain lands commonly known as 1602 Southside Boulevard, comprising of approximately 0.821 acres more or less, lay contiguous to the city limits of the city of Nampa, County of Canyon, State of Idaho, and that said land should be annexed into the city of Nampa, Idaho, as part of the RS-22 zone, declaring that said lands by proper legal description as described below be part of the City of Nampa, Canyon County, Idaho, and directing the City Engineer and Planning and Zoning Director to add said properties to the official maps of the City of Nampa, Idaho, repealing all ordinances, resolutions, orders, or parts thereof that in conflict herewith, providing an effective date, and directing the Clerk of the City of Nampa to file a certified copy of the ordinance and map of the area to be annexed with Canyon County, State of Idaho, and Idaho State Tax Commission, pursuant to Idaho Code Section 63215.
There is a request to pass this under suspension of rules. Council?
Mayor Kling, point of clarification. Which item were you reading? Was it
item 18? Number 15.
15. Okay, that's what I was talking about. Thank you.
I make the motion that we pass under suspension rules, please.
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion? Roll call?
Skog?
Yes.
Levi?
Yes.
Hogaboom?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Haverfield?
Yes.
Bruner?
Yes.
Item number 16 is postponed due to lack of supporting documentation. Item number 17 is postponed due to lack of supporting documentation. So we are ready for item number 18. This is the first reading of ordinance for annexation and zoning to RS-8.5 and subdivision preliminary plat approval for Stella's Point subdivision on the north side of Lake Lowell Avenue, east of Midway Road, for J. Walker Altera Consulting, representing the Truce Family Living Trust. The public hearing on this was on February the 5th.
An order determining that certain lands generally described as lying north of Lake Lowell and east of Midway Road, comprising approximately 46.85 acres more or less, lay contiguous to the city limits of the city of Nampa, Canyon, and of County of Canyon, State of Idaho, and that said land should be annexed into the city of Nampa as part of the RS-8.5 zone, declaring said lands by proper legal descriptions as described below be part of the city of Nampa, Canyon County, Idaho, directing the city engineer and planning and zoning director to add the property to the official maps of the city of Nampa, Idaho, repealing all ordinances, resolutions, and orders and parts thereof in conflict herewith, providing for an effective date and directing the city clerk of the city of Nampa to file a certified copy of the ordinance and map of the area to be annexed with Canyon County, State of Idaho, and the Idaho State Tax Commission, pursuant to Idaho Code Section 63215.
And again, there's a request to pass under suspension of rules.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? And roll call.
Skog?
Yes.
Levi?
Yes.
Hogaboam?
Yes.
Bruner?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Haverfield?
Yes.
Item number 20 is postponed due to lack of supporting documentation. Item number 21 is... Whoops. I'm sorry.
We have 164 Main that needs to be passed.
We did. Excuse us for just a minute. So.
Yeah, it's this one.
That we just did?
No, we did this one. Okay. We're still this one.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. So, excuse me, I missed one. Thank you for catching that. Okay, so this is item number 19 that I missed, and that is the first reading of ordinance for zoning map amendment to RMH from RMH to BC at 164 East Main Avenue for Amber Stubbe, representing Thomas Manshrek. The public hearing for this was on February the 5th.
An ordinance of the City of Nampa, Idaho, to provide BC zone designation for the certain lands commonly known as 164 East Main Avenue, Nampa, Idaho, comprising approximately of 0.57 acres more or less, determining that said lands is in the best interest of the citizens and consistent with the comprehensive plan of the City of Nampa, Idaho, rezoning said lands from RMH to BC, providing for a recording, instructing the city engineer to designate said property as BC on the official zoning map and other area maps of the city, providing for severability, providing for an effective date, and repealing all ordinances, rules, and regulations, and parts thereof in conflict herewith.
And there is a request on this one to pass under suspension of rules.
So moved.
Second.
Discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Skog?
Yes.
Haverfield?
Yes.
Levi?
Yes.
Hogaboam?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Bruner?
Yes.
So that was item number 19, and then we had just discussed that item number 20 and 21 are postponed due to lack of supporting documentation. That is correct, right? Okay, and then item number 22 is also postponed due to lack of supporting documentation. So I believe that fulfills the reading of our ordinances. Is that correct?
Madam Mayor?
Yes.
I was just curious, maybe staff or you can tell me, I've never seen this many postponed. Is there, we're just now publishing these and we haven't before? What's the scoop?
That's what I understand. I contacted the clerk's office today, asked the same question. They said normally they won't even have these in our packet. But this way, the developers can track and see that they're not they still have information to put into the packets.
It was my understanding they're trying to just, let's get this cleaned up and get it done by publishing it.
All right, thank you.
So item number 23 is reconsideration of one condition concerning the Meadowcrest Crest subdivision. With that, who is going to be speaking on behalf of this evening? Go ahead.
It's just a yes or no.
If I may, for half the council, I believe this is the first time that a party has moved for reconsideration since you joined the council. Let's see, not quite half, I guess. The way this works, this was an ordinance that was the ordinance allowing requests for reconsideration was adopted by the council about 2 years ago, and it's very narrow, and there's very little, there's no evidence submitted, no speaking allowed. What you have before you is a written request, which appears to have been supplemented today. I ordinarily might suggest that is evidence that is improperly considered. However, because it was an HOA, it was signed on behalf of an HOA, and it appears that these are the signatures of the members of the HOA, I doubt that there's too much harm involved there. The ordinance provides, just to give you the standard by which you should make this decision or remind you of it, the ordinance provides that a party requesting that the council reconsider the decision submit in writing that request. And the party needs to meet the following criteria. The party should be one, let me back up. The interested party should be either the owner of the property,
the applicant for the project, or an interested person who presented written or oral testimony at the public hearing on the application in question. Now, if representatives of the HOA presented testimony, I would suggest that that be considered met. There's some procedural requirements. It has to have been submitted within 14 days of that decision, which I assume planning and zoning staff have confirmed were met. The standard that they have to demonstrate for you to grant this decision, or the choice to reconsider it, would be that there's relevant information that they've presented, that it was not previously presented and may be in response to something that came up at the hearing, and that that information was not previously available. And there's another provision under state law that's not relevant today that, that could bring that as well. Again, no testimony or evidence is to be submitted today. You should deny it or grant it solely on the basis of the written request. If you choose to grant it, what happens is, again, this is a quasi-judicial process, so notice is provided at the expense of the requester. To bring all, to publish notice to everyone who got notice at the first hearing, to come back, you then have a de novo hearing, means you get to hear the matter again. So the decision again, to grant or deny it, base it on what you see before you. And if you have any significant discussion, I would say hold that for the hearing that, that you want to have. If you don't, then you can just grant or deny it today.
So for clarity, we can, you you could take this to another public hearing, or we can grant and, or deny today. Either one.
That's right. So denial of the request to reconsider would just lay that to rest. Granting it, the only decision would be today. It would then go back to planning and zoning staff, who at the expense of the requester would then notice this up for not the next council meeting. It would require probably the second or third from now to meet all of the publication requirements and posting requirements.
Okay.
So, Mayor, a question. So this does not go back before the P&Z Commission?
Would it be helpful if I read, and I think you guys all have it on page 6, the actually what they're asking for? All right. I'd be happy to read. Okay, so we, the undersigned residents of Roosevelt Park Subdivision, located on the southeast corner of Roosevelt Avenue and Middleton Road in Nampa, Idaho, request that South Lancaster Drive, a main thoroughway in RPS, remain closed until the completion of the Meadowcrest Subdivision homes by Hayden Homes, due to the heavy equipment used to build those homes, putting stress on our streets and center islands.
Mayor? Thank you. Question for legal. On item 22, they were listed on 22 but postponed due to lack of supporting documentation. So then we have 23, which is the reconsideration. So how does that all work?
The decision you made at the prior hearing, the ordinance that was not presented today, in part likely because of this request to reconsider. And had that documentation been ready, I'm sure that the agenda would have been assembled so that you first dealt with this question, and then if it is denied, proceed to the ordinance. But the decision you've made, the ordinance is simply the formality following that to implement the action that was requested. It would, of course, be inappropriate to adopt the ordinance, which wasn't ready for tonight, prior to deciding whether or not to reconsider your decision upon which the ordinance was based.
Follow up, please. So if we deny the reconsideration, then we go through the process of 22 and the reading process as listed. Is that right?
You could if the documentation were ready. It's my understanding that that documentation...
Right, I mean in the next meeting, I'm sorry.
Absolutely, as soon as it's ready, yes.
Okay. But if we approve the reconsideration, then it goes to public hearing. So then what happens? Is it all lumped together now?
That ordinance would simply be stayed until a final decision is made. Your reconsideration would essentially pull that back from being a final decision until the hearing, at which you would make a decision. And
That decision, of course, would not be subject to a subsequent reconsideration request under our ordinance. So that would become the final decision.
Okay, thank you. Aaron, thank you for your clarity. So what is the will of the council?
Mayor Kling, a question then. Can we bring staff up to consider what is being requested here on the basis of what we originally approved? There are five phases, if I remember right, on the subdivision.
I'm going to defer to legal on this.
Madam Mayor, Mr. Haverfield, our recommendation would be that you simply limit your decision to what's before you. And
so can we have comment between ourselves?
I think you can discuss it between yourselves, but no evidence or testimony should be elicited from staff or any party in the audience. Okay.
I just recall that first phase, there was barriers on this road system. What I believe they're asking for is those barriers to stay up through the completion of all five phases, if that's what I read this to me.
Yeah, it seems like that's what the request is. So I forgot how long the full build-out was and whether the request is until every last lot or every single home is built that street remain closed. So,
Which would be an undue burden on those first phase property owners of not having adequate access for them. As future phases are developed, I think other access points are being developed to provide for, I think it's up to, is it 30 or 35? That's what I couldn't remember. I was going to ask Norm. When you get to that many lots, you have to have two access points. In this case, the first phase, I think, was 37 or so dwelling units. And so that second access point, even though it was being a fire engine access only with temporary barriers that are removable by the fire department emergency vehicles, they're still complying, but they're also being considerate to the subdivision to the north. So I was okay with the original concept and probably wouldn't support a reconsideration at this point.
Madam Mayor, fellow council members, there's nothing new that I see in the application that was what already presented. It's already been presented to us. I would move that we respectfully deny the request for reconsideration.
Second.
Madam Mayor. Excuse me. When we have over 100 people in that area sign a petition requesting our assistance to help them within a situation that they feel is going to affect their lifestyle and their homes and their roads that they're on, we have to consider those very important issues that they have in that neighborhood. I understand that the roads is a particularly important issue for developers. I know that, and I understand the developer needs to have that road open. However, at this point, I think, if I could be wrong, I thought the developer had two entry points, one off of Middleton and one off of Lake Lowell, right? Am I right on that? So therefore, you wouldn't have to use Lancaster.
That would be in a further build-out.
Yes, right.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. They're asking for, in this motion, which is unreasonable in a sense, to wait and not allow access through for emergency purpose, other than just emergency purposes, to the north until the full build-out takes place, which could be several years from now.
Right, I understand that. Right.
So
that's my position.
And that's what we considered the night of the hearing when we originally went through this process, was a consideration of making sure that we were looking at both sides equally and fairly. And obviously, we don't want to create an unsafe condition for the people that are already there. That's not the intent at all. But just going forward, the development, I think, is logical and progressive as it was presented to us, and that's why we voted in favor of it that evening.
Yeah, I'm aware of that. That's my stand.
Is there any other discussion?
I don't like to prolong things, but there needs to be further communication between the development and the residents that live in that area. So I will be voting for reconsideration.
Okay, so currently we have a motion on the floor, and the motion was
to deny.
And so with that, I guess we need to move forward. Yeah, roll call on that, unless there's further discussion. Okay, so roll call.
Levi?
No.
Hogaboom?
Yes.
Bruner?
No.
Rodriguez?
No.
Haverfield?
Yes.
Skog?
Yes.
That's 3-3.
I think it is. And I think I'm going to vote on the side of the reconsideration, which is a no. Okay, so with that, it will move to back to a public forum to at least have further discussion at this time. All right, so we are now into new business on our agenda, and our first item is item number 24, and this is to authorize estimated expenses for public education outreach for the Nampa Wastewater Phase 2 upgrades bond vote. Michael Fuse.
Mayor and Council, the last meeting, two for three on the sewer stuff. Appreciate all of your efforts involving the adoption of the facility plan, the authorization for vote. Now we are, the direction was to have staff look at what it takes to do our public education component and look internally. We went through been working closely with Amy Bowman. She has been working tremendously hard. She's almost a wastewater expert on her 10th day in the city. With that, we tried to go through the materials that we were looking at before. We don't see that there's a significant difference as far as the expense goes, so we present that before you. We are also asking for some temp help because it's right now Amy is the only person left standing to work on this for doing the public education component. We have to communicate to 100,000 people to help them understand the decision. For those that, depending on how the vote goes, then we'll be back before you in July for a rate hearing. And so the vote is essentially kind of really the public education for both the vote and the rate hearing, because that's the answer. So we've got it here before you. The request before you is authorized Public Works to expend up to $79,470 for direct expenses. And then with this, we also, if you look at the previous study that when we asked our consultant, that was essentially almost 2.5 full-time staff for the entire 84 days. We now have 70-some days. I haven't done the math. And we have one full-time staff and one part-time staff. That's as much time as we can put into it, is marginal part-time. And so we're looking to get some assistance for at least one. The way we come up with $15,000, that's about one person at $20 an hour to a temp agent. And then some students that we can help out as well. We have reached out, just a side note, we have reached out to some individuals with some expertise in this area to work temporarily. I think it's going to be a struggle finding someone with some talent at $20 an hour. So we'll do the best we can with what we've got.
Mayor, if I may, a question. Talking to you previously, Michael, my understanding is this first mailing that would, even though it's staggered, it would be able to hit all of our Napa residents through their billing mailing. Is that my understanding?
Mayor, Councilor Bruner, we're working on, Amy's working on a bill insert. Has to be completed by March 7th in order to reach all the customers through their bill.
And so, Mayor, and just there again, so I just put it out there. It's just my personal bias and sense. I will not be voting for this as stated. I will vote if we delete mailings number 2, 3, and 4, which would $46,000 and $46,400. That would mean $33,075 is what I will okay. Otherwise, I will vote no on this.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
How would you anticipate us to get the word out?
Through the billing and also through all the other things stated other than the three mailings. I think the three mailings are a waste of postage and time and taxpayer money.
Okay.
I've done enough billings over the years through NMU and so on and found no productivity in people.
And the mailings?
Yes. The first one, yeah. If you have a bill, you're going to open it up. The others, I think, are going to end up in waste baskets.
Mayor, I get in clear. So since we're talking about this billing situation and mailers, what does the city pay in costs of billing to every single the rate payer in Napa.
Mayor, Councilor Rodriguez, the estimated costs in here are for direct costs to do the mailers. Otherwise, we put it. If we can make a copy and put it in with the bill, it's the cost of copies. It's the roughly $3,000 to put it in with the thing.
How's that all?
Well, that's for with the bill. If it's others, it's roughly $10,000 to do it. In order to get every household that's in this
bulk mail.
Bulk mail, about the cheapest version we can.
And what about the apartment complexes? How do you do those?
Well, Mayor, Councilor Rodriguez, you're getting beyond my expertise. We have people on that, and we terminated the agreement with the most expert that we have, so beyond that, we're asking folks. I don't know.
Oh, I see.
Well, you do that with some people that are willing to go door-to-door and put those in. It's very similar to a campaign.
Oh, is it?
It just, yeah, it's very similar to a campaign. Okay. It's just a lot of feet on the streets. In the noise that you have during the campaign, because there's a lot, it's a legislative session, you have to get through that noise, and we have to remind people to vote. And there is most of this, like our billing, the first one, I don't know how that's working as far as the timing of these bills going out, but the first one's going out right away. You have to remind people to vote. If you don't send anything or have communication, we can use Nextdoor, social media, we'll do Facebook Nextdoor. I'm really concerned if we don't get something out there that we will not reach the public and get the vote out. Because it's hard to get that word out. It's up to the council.
Mayor, Commissioner Bruner, or councilman.
Councilman today.
Depends on what forum we're in. So what was the dollar value you came up with?
I deleted... There, if you want me to go through it.
Yeah, I just want a value.
Okay, I would okay. Currently, the ask is $79,475. I would okay $33,075. That would be omitting mailer two, mailer three, mailer four. Those are the costs plus the postage for those mailings.
And if I'm not mistaken, there was $15,000 as well for temporary services? Or is that a part of the $79,000?
So that's in addition.
In addition. So it's about $94,000 total. Okay. Michael, my question for you then is, are you prepared to speak about the digital requests? Do you know what they're talking about here? Talks about social media. Is that Facebook? What is it?
I'm certainly not an expert in that area. We have staff that are, but it is push marketing through the social media efforts.
I guess I'd be happy to speak to it.
Mayor, I guess I don't really know how to answer this question. If it's strictly, if it's down in the weeds and you need that information, we'll be back in another 2 weeks and get two more. I don't know how else to answer that question.
Okay, then let me just, my final question is, why do we have $10,000 in for contingency? What's the contingency for?
Councilor, we've had 2 weeks to go through an entire, almost $200,000 budget for public education campaign. We've tried to figure out what that's going to cost to the best of our ability. It's impossible to stand here to tell you that we've thought of everything, particularly where we don't have, we're trying to figure out as we go.
So if we were to give you a dollar amount and say, do what you think, best way to reach people, instead of the full amount of the ask that's broken out, because I had issues with other that Councilman Bruner didn't even mention, but, you know, to get into the weeds, like you're saying, doesn't make sense, but to be concerned about the value that we're giving out, I guess that's where we need to be accountable. So that's why we asked the question. The $10,000 or $9,900 for contingency seemed to... You know, to me, it just seemed awkward, but again, it is what it is, like you say.
Mayor, thank you. Michael, question, the $79,000 figure, I'm thinking, and I'm just looking here back on our last meeting of 220, where we were looking at having consulting service And they were going to charge us $89,975. Was that including all the mailings, or was that in addition?
Mayor, Councilor Levi, that was the technical staff. That was essentially the labor portion. Well, the answer is this is the same number that they had looked at from an expense side, direct expense. The alternatives, the contingency is like we're trying to come up with our best answer. I would make the same statement as I made last time, right? If the vote is yes, we've spent too much, and if the vote's no, we'll likely not have spent enough. I don't know. This is the best information I have. We tried to come up with an estimate. If we had additional time, we'd probably look for additional help. We're trying to get this done. If we don't notify, the biggest concern I have is not whether the answer to the vote is how many people are going to show up on July's public hearing when we say the rates are X. If those go 93% because people voted no and people didn't understand what no meant, this building's not big enough to hold the people that are going to be here complaining, or at least after October 1 when their bill gets here. So I'm trying to do the absolute best that we can with the resources that we got. And if you want us to do less and give us less, that's what we'll do. The young people show up in July.
Mayor Kling, if I could ask. Based on Councilman Bruner's, more have a question more for Councilman Bruner than anybody. We gave him $15,000 before, is that correct, of the last hearing? And now, does this include plus $33,075, or is that separate? Well, that would make it about $45,000 for this proposal.
I'm not recalling the 15 years.
Actually, we did an initial vote last time and allocated $5,000 to labor and $10,000 to advertising costs, and I would anticipate in this vote, it would have come in and been a part of this. It's up to the council. I will say, though, if it's not important that this passes, then you can do whatever you want to do. But we stand a huge risk of this not passing. And the greatest challenge we face is when you go out to a vote, when a yes vote means no and a no vote means yes, that is the most confusing thing you can do to the public. And in this case, for people that don't want their bill to go up, they're going to vote no. And you don't just send one item out and think you've communicated. It doesn't work that way. It takes a campaign and it takes communication. It's going to take a lot of effort. We do not have the staff in our office to do this alone. And it won't happen. It's impossible. Because we have had literally 7 days to come up with these numbers. And that's why we're presenting back to council exactly what was done, because Amy's first day, she hit the ground, and 7 days later, we had to come back with a recommendation. And so I think we need to be careful that we don't create an environment with staff that we're set up to fail. And at this point, that's how I feel.
Yeah, Madam Mayor, if I may. Yes. I understand Councilman Bruner's concerns about, you know, maybe slicing this up a little bit. I realize when we spoke about this matter before, I was prepared to take out certain items in the consulting fee because there was concerns. There's unanimous concerns about that being too high, but we, for the most part, rejected that. So we've already saved about 80 to 90, well, actually more than that on that component.
Wouldn't that mean about 60?
Yeah. We've already saved about $75,000 based on the consulting fees, and what were reduced here before me are hard costs. And while, you know, efficiency, I think coming from the realm of efficiency, we might have some concerns. I intend to support this. I also realize by that motion, we kind of obligated you and your staff to do this work without actually any prior deliberation, and the consulting costs are all kind of shifted to you. So I think $15,000, which is the request here for temporary in-house staff, is reasonable. This is the most confusing bond that I think has been placed before the people. I am not exaggerating every single comment I've seen on the news articles that have been placed on social media. Every single comment that says that they're voting this down, they think that they're voting the project down, and they think that they're going to incur no cost, and they will be in for a rude awakening. And I think, you know, unfortunately, we all get junk mail, and we sometimes don't open it or toss it. It might take a few pieces of junk mail. Maybe one of them gets opened. and gets through. So I intend to support this. I won't make a motion at this point because
and
of
Councilman, I don't have a problem with putting more money in some other areas. I just don't think this is the way Billings is going to do it. You know, Aaron is out here. I think the newspaper, social media, want to put up a billboard. I'm fine. I just don't think this is a wise use of money. So that's why I will not be supporting it.
I also, Darrell, Councilman Bruner.
That's my Darrell's fine.
Yeah. I will say, just know that we will be good stewards and we'll research. And if we're approved to do three mailings, that doesn't mean we'll do them, because we need to have some discussions and figure out how best to get this word out. And so we're not going to just go do it if it's approved. We're going to be talking. I'd be happy to have you be a part of that, because we want to be good stewards. We just need the ability to move forward and do the research and get the work done.
I'm looking at the breakdown, so that's what I have to vote on tonight. If there's an amended edition, I realize time is short, but I'm just not ready to vote for this currently tonight.
Well, and Mayor, you bring up a good point. We've reached out to all of you as winners that have done this. Fortunately, I've never ran for an office.
Soon.
No interest in me. Nor had to go through an entire public vote. Now, I've been office of professional societies that they tend to say, hey, we think you'd be a really good president. Or a baseball board of an individual that said, hey, this guy might help us out. But I've never had to go through the entire public process. We certainly would appreciate your input on things that we can do differently with whatever resources that we have. We have sent out a request for any touch point that you all have with the community, your assistance that has helped you out in your voting and your campaigns. If you can get us that information and we can use them, they or you will likely need products, pamphlets, information packets, those types of things. We would use this for that. That's our intention. That gives us 6 more staff to help out. So any available waking moment, I've already canceled everything I have between now and May, but for 2 actual personal items. But beyond that, I will get anything I possibly can. I also, if you think about the time frame, we also have to build a budget between now and then, and we have to also have 6 other divisions to keep moving. But other than that, we're everywhere we are. So wherever you can help out, let us know.
Mayor Michael, and this is just my own personal, I'm not speaking to anyone else, I'm happy for open houses, whatever the case is, as long as they're after my working hours, I'm happy to participate in those. I feel like that's worthwhile.
Further discussion?
Madam Mayor, fellow council members, Michael, thank you for putting up with us all. Important is that, at least from up here, while we're sitting here, we do not advocate for the passing of the bond. We advocate for information so that, as the mayor says, people, when they vote, they know what it's about. And it's going to take this to get this done. Though Michael's been kind enough to call us experts, I won't take that title for this type of thing. So I would support the what is in front of us, inclusive of the previous $15,000. So when we say this total. So I'll make the motion that we approve what has been presented.
I'll second that.
Further discussion? If none, roll call.
Haverfield?
Yes.
Levi?
Yes.
Bruner?
No.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Vogelbaum?
Yes.
Skob?
Yes.
Thank you. Item number 25. This is staff report, and it is to approve a 2-year, $450,000 IACP grant for the Nampa Police Department. And Joe? Chief Huff.
Actually, if you're all right, Mayor, I'd like to have Detective Angela Weeks come up and speak on this tonight. She's been involved with this grant since the inception, and she's actually the expert on this subject. So you're fine with
Thank
that.
You. Yes. Thank you. Welcome, Angela.
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity to come and tell you about great things that are going to be happening in our community. The International Association of Chiefs of Police was awarded a substantial grant by the Department of Justice to award money to 6 selective law enforcement agencies across the country to look at their policies and protocols and practices in domestic violence, sexual assault, stalking, and human trafficking, to really delve into what the department is doing, what we do really well and what we can do better. And we were fortunate enough to be awarded as one of those six model sites that's going to be a demonstration site by the International Association of Chiefs of Police. And the idea is to take this $450,000 to provide training, really look at our policies, provide some staff to look at that, go back through reports, really look at what we can be doing for best practice. And then in 2 years, we will be rolling that out as a model police community in those issues to the country.
It is amazing. And I think that we do need to approve this grant. And congratulations. Great job. Great job. Any questions? Okay.
Mayor, I'd make a motion that we approve the 2-year $450,000 IACP grant for Nampa Police Department.
Second. Any discussion? Roll call.
Skog?
Yes.
Haverfield?
Yes.
Hogaboom?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Bruner?
Yes.
Levi?
Yes.
Thank you.
Good job.
Thank you for your work. It's appreciated. Okay, item number 26 on the agenda is to authorize the engineering division to proceed with the formal bidding process for the Elijah Drain at Greenhurst Culvert Repair and Road Widening Project, and to authorize the mayor to sign the LHTAC/local agreement for the 2018 Local Strategic Initiatives Program. Michael Fuse.
So move.
Second.
Discussion?
It's no cost to the city, so great.
Yeah, that's what's
good.
Roll call.
Is that correct, Michael?
Mayor, Councilor, there's $300,000. The $1 million is no match. There is $300,000 that's in addition to that needs to be added to the project.
Well, then we better talk about that.
Yeah, we'll talk about that first. I didn't catch that.
Okay, so discussion.
Sorry.
Questions for Michael? You didn't even do your staff report. I'm sorry, I'm past that.
I will pull my motion.
How about if we do your report?
Mayor and Council. So, if you recall, this is a pretty interesting timing. About the last council meeting in February, we canceled the project of the Greenhurst and Southside road widening project. Because of funding, a lot of it was due to the change orders on second and third, the price over budget on second and third, change orders on 11th, the one place we had some funding remaining at streets was in this project. Engineering staff, led primarily by Tom Points, his team, had put in for what's called the Strategic Initiatives Grant. It's new this year to the state. It's part of that. You might have seen some confusion on the budget this year that they had to refund what the governor did last year. These are the projects that came out of $11, $12 million. This is one of those type of projects that was just approved and adjusted in this legislature this year. We've had a project in the works. A big part of it was the project had to be ready. So we obviously had a project ready. We put it in the right category. It got funded this year, $1 million, no match. So if the project would have been only $1 million, would have taken no match and met the strategic initiatives. This project, total estimated cost is $1.3 million. We took $1 million grants. We still kept $100,000 on streets and funded the remaining with the irrigation and whatnot. So that's why we're before you. The project itself hasn't changed. The funding has. And so it's a pretty big win. So this is a two-step request. First one, authorize the agreement, the state-local agreement between LTAC, Local Highway Technical Assistance Council, and the city to receive the Strategic Initiatives Grant. And then the second one authorizes to proceed with the bidding process, so we'll go get that culvert fixed.
I'll make my motion again.
I'll second it again.
Further discussion? Roll call.
Skog?
Yes.
Levi?
Yes.
Hogaboom?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Haverfield?
Yes.
Bruner?
Yes.
Item number 27 is authorize work change directives 1 and 2 and subsequent change orders for the FY17 water projects for a not to exceed amount of $50,000.
So moved.
I'll second that.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion? Roll call.
Skog?
Yes.
Levi?
Yes.
Kogaboom?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Bruner?
Yes.
Haverfield?
Yes.
Item number 28. This item is to award a bid and authorize the mayor to sign a contract with McLaren Well Drilling LLC for a Well 5 upgrade project in the amount of $76,085.
So, second.
Discussion. Roll call.
Skog?
Yes.
Haverfield?
Yes.
Levi?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Hogaboom?
Yes.
Bruner?
Yes.
Item 29 has been postponed, which puts us to item number 30, which is authorize staff to establish, advertise, and conduct a public auction for parcels R11319, R11320, and R11324. The minimum bid for which must be equal to or greater than the appraised price of $45,000.
So moved.
Seconded as read by the mayor.
Madam Mayor?
Yes.
Can I simply ask, have these properties been declared surplus in a minimum amount? Have we been through that public hearing process yet?
Mayor, Councilor, I've been through it. This is an extremely cumbersome process. It's federal highways money, so we've already declared them surplus. We went to the neighbors. Neighbors said not interested, so now it's the next step.
Apology, I just want to make sure.
Thank you for the question, because I need that.
Mayor?
Yes?
I appreciate that legal, because that was one of my questions. My second question, just curious, what is it currently zoned over in that area?
Not sure, but I could find out. Okay. I assume residential.
I was asked.
That's so. My assumption.
Thank you.
Is there any further discussion? I believe it's been moved and seconded. If there is no further discussion, we'll stand for roll call.
Levi?
Yes.
Hogaboom?
Yes.
Bruner?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Skog?
Yes.
Haverfield?
Yes.
Okay, item number 31 is to approve the recycled water discharge and use agreement with Pioneer Irrigation District. Michael?
Mayor, Council, cannot say enough positive thanks to the work of Mark Hilty and Nate Runyon to put this together. This is, as you've adopted the facility plan for the preferred alternative, this enables the preferred alternative to move forward. This is the agreement between the city and Pioneer to discharge to the Phyllis Canal, and that's a groundbreaking decision. I think it's a huge step. And bringing this before you, this was one of the questions Council brought up as a significant hurdle in us moving forward. We've met that hurdle. It will go before the Pioneer Board later this week. So we're essentially first, but timing was who goes first, so we're here. And we can certainly get into details. The city attorney's ready. Nate's here. Certainly get into discussion if you'd like.
Mayor?
Yes.
Michael, I'm not sure. I have some questions. They kind of relate to the contract, but the specifics, and if not, just let me know to get back on my turnip truck or whatever. So when we, Councilman Hogaboom and myself, we visited the wastewater treatment plant in Meridian, and I was really intrigued with the reclaimed water, et cetera. And they were indicating, for instance, that all the pipes have to be purple. So do we have to get into having separate pipes in order to send it over to the irrigation? Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor, Council. So purple pipe, it's in the state regulations. CUNA's doing it, and they didn't go all purple pipe, so it makes you believe you could do it.
Okay, what about signage? Because I remember that Laura Light mentioned that there had to be incredible signage, even if you wouldn't drink the water, but there had to be signage. What about that?
Mayor, Councilwoman Levi, again, I looked to this permit that CUNA was granted from the state for a reuse program. It was in the last 2 years, and they did not have to do signage.
And then the last thing is the date of commencement in this contract. During that time, are we still able to explore other options of using reclaimed water?
Yeah, Councilwoman Levi. So the agreement is very favorable for the city. It says that the district has to be ready to take our water by 2026, which is when, as early as we could possibly be ready. It also says that we can send them water, but we don't have to send them water, and that's so that we can continue to evaluate industrial use and any other use of the reuse water.
Okay. Thank you.
Eric Ling, one question. Nate, it does say Class A water. We're currently discharging Class B water.
Councilor Haverfield. No. So the classification is basically the disinfection level of the reuse water. So a Class B, you can only put it on a certain piece of land that people aren't going to touch. Class A, you can put on a yard, on a park.
And that's what I understood. We needed to get it to a Class A rating. That's what this whole process is about as well. But we're discharging. Now, Class A water is still not potable water. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Back to your question as far as drinkable water. So, okay, thanks.
Is there any further discussion, questions?
Madam Mayor, the fellow council members, Michael, to you and your staff, everybody involved, this is wonderful. I'm so grateful that this went through with Pioneer. I move that we approve the recycled water discharge and use agreement and authorize the mayor to sign and authorize city staff to implement its terms.
Second.
Any further discussion? Stand for roll call.
Levi?
Yes.
Hogaboom?
Yes.
Bruner?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Haverfield?
Yes.
Scott?
Yes.
Item number 32 is a discussion of council on whether or not to hold council workshop meetings and the extent thereof. I believe, Bruce, you have requested this be on the agenda.
Yes, Madam Mayor. Thank you for putting it on the agenda. I just wanted to hear from council rather than a bunch of emails what they thought about doubling our meetings each month, or maybe you can add to that if you really want to do that every other Monday. I prefer to have everything take place as much as possible on our council nights, and then if there's a special workshop like for budget or for wastewater treatment plan, then that's needed, of course. So I just want to know what the rest of the council and you have to say, Matt.
And I'm happy to, if we need a short workshop, to do it on council night, the same night as council would do it early. We do have Valley Regional Transit coming up, and that date, I don't know why that date, but it is what it is. We do have an extensive workshop on March 26th. Unfortunately, that is a long workshop, and we're trying to figure out how to get it into one meeting versus two. So that's the assessment process we've been through and letting staff report to council to find, you know, their stuff. And so that's going to be a long one. It's not a quick one. If there's anything quick that we need to cover, then we can do it prior to, or we can do it certain things here. In listening earlier, my understanding was that we need to be having these discussions here at the public, at the bench, and so however best to facilitate that, I'm open to that. So, and I'm open to the will of the council as it works, as it relates to workshops. Thoughts?
Mayor, I would just prefer to have them happen at the council meeting if at all possible, unless there is an extensive, like the Valley Ride or wastewater, et cetera. But I think it should be happening on the council meeting nights and happening during it. And so hopefully add to the agenda, I guess is what it would amount to, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. And the public, you know, as long as we're having a public hearing at 7 o'clock, then our public, though, is here to also be part of that discussion, or at least listen to the discussion. That's just my 2 cents worth.
Probably it's a good idea. I'd like to see that.
What's that?
On the city council hearings. Just before the city council hearings, I should say.
And I agree with that, too. I mean, it's difficult enough to keep track of all the other commission assignments, like coming in and speaking to planning and zoning or my airport commission assignment as well, and NDC during the daytime. I just prefer to have everything on the first and third Mondays if possible.
Perfect. That's what we'll do, and we'll try to do, to the extent we can do it at a council meeting, we'll do that. Sometimes it's lengthy to where maybe not everyone, we've got a lengthy agenda, we can put it out ahead of time if we need to. Other than that, we do have March 26th on, which is that workshop piece, and that's going to be a long one. And then the Valley Regional Transit at this time. So it's not a vote, but thank you for the, I think that's great. Okay, discussion, item number 33, discussion of budget planning by council. So, Bruce, you had mentioned it, and I know, Vicki, you have some thoughts on, I don't know what your thoughts are. So Vicki has a schedule that I believe she has sent out to council with the budget workshops and the schedule for the budget planning. Was there something that was being recommended in place of what she has already recommended?
Madam Mayor, yes, I wanted this so we could, again, have open discussion rather than emails or just wondering or maybe getting together with you to talk about each of our own individual thoughts about the 2019 budget. I didn't want to have staff involved in that. Maybe we have questions. This is so we can talk openly amongst ourselves and you, Madam Mayor. For instance, fellow council members in there, how do we want the budget presented from staff? Do we want zero-based budgeting? I don't want that. Do we want balanced budget presentation? And what's the intent? As you, Madam Mayor, you probably already decided that, but I don't know about it. Do we have the foregone? We talked a little bit about that right after, or in January, our first meeting. I appreciate that discussion. Would you go for foregone if you decided to? I would not. Would you take 1%, 2%, 3% of the budget increase? It's good to let staff know, I think, that now, so they don't come in with a 3% budget if you have no intention of taking any of the budget increase, so that they don't waste their time adding things or department heads that you're not going to approve. Or if you want to go foregone and really stick the taxpayer, in my words, then let them know so they can give a dream budget to you.
I would be happy to speak to some discussions that we've had. We just had a director's meeting this morning. The deep dive assessment process that we have been in, while that is not budget preparation, we are identifying the needs, whether they be space needs, employee needs. So this assessment phase is an opportunity for us to dig deep and understand where we are as a city. So the workshop that is on March 26th, what my feeling is that we'll come and present to council on the 26th and provide that report as to this, the assessment and the findings. And you'll have at that time the opportunity to see what's coming forth from staff. For me to make a decision on where I'm going to go, I want to see, I've got to get through this assessment phase first to see where we are, because I don't want to bypass the process. And so our process right now is, let's see where we are. Let's do the deep dive assessment, which we're almost done with. We'll provide the PowerPoint slides for every assessment. Every departmental PowerPoint slide we'll provide to council well in advance of the 26th. And then the thought is on the 26th, for you, while you view all those PowerPoints, to jot down your questions. And then you'll have an opportunity. Each director will present their highest needs and communicate with council. You'll have the opportunity to ask questions, and that will position us then for the next step, which is budget discussions. But the intent has been, let's get through this deep dive assessment phase and go through the process of seeing where we are as a city, and then we can make some decisions on where we go from there.
I'd like to hear from other council members. I can tell you, based on experience, that there are more needs than we can meet, far more, and legitimate needs. So I'm looking for your thoughts and guidance as to where you would like to see with percentages. And of course, that doesn't, you're not bound by what you're sharing.
But we can kind of make, even though I realize there should be preparation, the 26th of March is kind of serve as that purpose, would it not, for that discussion?
Yes, but the deep dives, at least to me, are a bit of a mystery. I don't know who's involved or what's happening there.
Okay. We'll find that out on the 26th.
Well, I'm happy to share. Deep dives, this is an opportunity for me as mayor. My responsibility is to supervise staff and run this city. And so I have asked each department to provide me with a deep dive. I want to know what their mission, their vision, organizational structure, the work that they're doing, the strengths that they see within their organization, the challenges that they're facing as an organization. As they identify those challenges, those are the things that they're bringing forward and the great things that they're doing at the same time, but it's part of that education process. And so that's what I've been doing with staff, and it's a big undertaking to get it done in the first 100 days. But as we finish this process, then my thought was we'll bring that to council so that you guys can experience and see what we've found. We still have two deep dives left, and then as soon as we get done with those, we'll be getting those PowerPoints out to everyone and then have them present. All this is done during the day, during staff time. It has not been a council meeting, but this has been my opportunity to really understand where we are as a city and what our needs are. And you're right, the needs are great. They're beyond our ability to fund. But without doing the deep dive, it's very difficult to know what needs to be prioritized and how to prioritize. So as I gave you that sheet early on, which is assess, communicate, target, its assessment phase is the first 100 days. The communicate is March 26th to council. April 17th is the state of the city. And then the target is going to be working on a 10-year plan, which will take us months into the future before we get that done. But we will be moving forward looking at a target plan, which we'll talk to council about that. But I think that we need to come back and revisit our strategic plan and identify how we function in the next 10 years in meeting the needs of our city.
Mayor, please, if I could ask, is this deep dive, is this budget-based or just employee based on what they give the information to you?
It was not intended to be a precursor to budget, but whenever you start digging deep, you find out that there are needs that come up, so then there is that element of budget that comes in, mm-hmm. but it was not intended to be a precursor or to replace our budget process at all.
Okay.
So
I think that's probably a good thing that we're doing. I thank you for that. But I'm really concerned about the budget, and I think a step in the right direction is to give us an idea where you're going, and I don't know what that's going to show yet. But I'm kind of leaning more toward Councilman Scoggs. We need to know as quick as we can to start working on what kind of budget you would like to see and us give to the community. So.
I won't be making a position until I have knowledge to make a good decision. And so I'm not going to stay right now. Where I'm going to go, I'm spending time learning. And we need to make good, informed decisions. And so I won't make any prediction on anything until we get through this deep dive process. The staff has done an absolute amazing job in digging and working and researching and bringing forth great information. And I appreciate that. And then I'm going to stick to that process of learning, and then we'll step into that next process of budget. But we need to get through the probably the middle of April. What is the first date, our first budget meeting?
We are meeting with department. I'm meeting with department directors. You and I are meeting with department directors in May.
Yeah. So I think we have time to actually go through the process, and that's what my intent is. Further questions?
Mayor Kling, fellow councilman, 4 years ago, when Bruce and I were both elected to council, the budget process was a little bit more fragmented than it's been the last 2 years. I think at least the last 2 years, maybe three, the last 2 years we've been presented with a balanced budget by the staff, which has been a lot easier for us to deal with instead of the first 2 years where we were provided with information from every department. We had to make decisions that made it a lot more difficult because everybody's asking, and they're asking for more than probably they need to settle on what they can get. So a direction given to the mayor and staff is what we've done the last few years of a percentage amount which we would stand behind as a council. So I guess that's what Bruce was trying to get to, is how do we want to direct staff to present a budget that's balanced, present all the findings from the deep dives to validate an ask that might be or above or beyond what we're willing to work with. So I think that's what you need to start thinking about, is what you would prefer to have presented, what direction we should give as a council to help them move forward the way that they have in the last couple of years, or go back to the way it was 4 years ago, which I would not be in favor of.
Madam Mayor, so if I understand correctly, I've followed the budgets for the most part over the last 4 years, even though I haven't been on the council. If I recall correctly, maybe 4 years ago, I think the council took nothing on an increase. And just this past year, the full 3% was taken, if I'm correct?
Yes. Well, but it ended up being less than that, I believe, 2-point-something.
Oh, okay. I thought it was
3%. We allowed up to the 3%, but I think it came in less than that.
It was pretty darn close, within hundreds of dollars, I think.
Hundreds of dollars of...
You call it
3%.
Millions?
Yeah. Okay, 3%.
Yeah. Okay, 2.99999?
Yeah.
Okay.
3.111.
And so so being new on the council, obviously, I'm trusting that you're explaining a fragmented process, maybe where every department's making their requests, and then the council sitting down trying to then nail down and prioritize where to cut, as opposed to maybe more of a process where you're indicating more of a unified front, where we're saying 2% and you're kind of, or 1% or 0 or 3, and there's sort of a signal. So what comes back has already been kind of sifted through some sort of prioritization. Is that what you're...
Well, I think the value is when you give a direction as a council to the staff, that they work together as a team to come up with a unified plan that they're all behind. It creates a better team unity on the part of the staff, all the different departments. Instead of us picking and choosing who is more deserving than others, it's something that they worked out together before they've even come to us. And I think that is that helped a lot, I think, to create that better team morale and a team approach, which was not there before. I think it was individuals coming forward and who was the better spokesman for their department. And I think this way, the mayor and the staff leaders work together, and there's some give and take that's going to happen behind doors that we're not going to be privy to, I think, to get things taken care of.
I would concur, Mayor, that that's how I would like to have it happen. And bad terminology, where they arm wrestle ahead of time before coming before us.
So balanced budget presentation.
4 years ago, again, the approach that we were kind of tasked with, what we ran on, was we had the highest levy rate in the state of Idaho, if not second only, maybe one other city. So that was an emphasis. First 2 years, we didn't allow a budget increase, and so that made it kind of difficult, but we were coming out of somewhat of a recession, so that was the reason for that. Now we're seeing some growth, but now it's still, we have to be concerned about the direction that we're giving staff as far as on budget increases, because we're facing a bond election that is going to, on top of that, we're going to add, it becomes unsustainable. And then you try to throw some of the things that the county's trying to throw at us as well. It's just too much. And so we need to be frugal in a sense, but open-minded to the realities of what the departments are going to be needing. So I think it's still an open dialogue, but it's very helpful, I believe, to give a direction. That's what they're looking for from us.
We had discussed this morning that we have smart directors that are doing a great job, and the thing that we discussed and we will continue to discuss is coming together with that budget. I think the other discussion that we've realized is that our current funding for our city, our vision is poor with high crime. And that's not where we want to be as a city. We're funding our streets to a level of poor, and we're not even up to poor yet. And our crime, because we haven't funded police, our crime rate is high, the highest in the Treasure Valley now. And so we cannot continue, and I think this is where it's important. I know when I was elected, people said, that's not the vision they have for this community, is poor with high crime. And so the reason we're doing this deep dive is that we've got to decide where do we go? How do we do this? We've got tough decisions ahead of us as a city because our taxes are too high. And we've got major expenses coming, but we've also kicked the can down the road and we've not funded things that we needed to fund. So then you've got infrastructure and things that have not been cared for. And as far as I'm concerned, I'm not going to hand that to our kids and our grandkids So we've got some work, some hard work to do, and I've had these discussions with staff as we try to figure out how do we do this. But we have some great people, and they're working very, very hard, but we have tough decisions ahead because our expenses are high, our taxes are still too high, and yet we're funding our streets to a level of poor for high crime. And I know that we have citizens of this community that want better than that. So we've got to figure out how to get it done. And I'm not, if you guys say, you know, you're going to limit it to 1%, then you know what, we're going to have high crime and poor streets. And I don't think our community wants that. So I think that we need to get through the process. We need to look at the deep dives that we're doing. We need to see what our needs are, and then we need to make some really good decisions. And I would hope the council would support that.
Mayor, and then maybe just comment in there again. Lots of research needs to be done. But the main thing is I want us, and this will be my priority, is that we look at where we are spending money, where we don't need to be spending money, and reprioritize that. I agree with you on some consulting things and so on, but I agree with this wastewater thing. I don't see taxpayers going to want to be paying more, us increasing 3%. So I say look very close at expenditures. Streets have to happen. Okay. Safety has to happen. Yep. But there's a lot of other things that we need to tighten the belt on. I don't know what those are. I mean, it's easy for me to say. But what I'm saying, let's look very, very closely and let's change some mindsets. These directors are wonderful, but we've been in a spending mindset because things have been good. Mm-hmm. So, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Thank you. I just want to say that I support that we need to look at the results of the deep dive first. For myself, I want perspective, and I want that foundation to be able to build upon and in the perspective to see what the needs really are before I try to make a decision and commit myself to 1%, 2%, or balanced, whatever it might be.
Yeah. Thank you.
I have, Mayor, one other comment. I mean, as part of the budget process, can we revisit with Vicki just part of that, maybe franchise fees and the possibility of finding or maximizing revenue streams that they're to be had other than property taxes. I realize we lean on property taxes. That's the most regressive form of taxation, and if there's other revenue streams, and I know it's what the county is trying to look at as far as the local option tax, either for or against, I'd look at it more, but I mean, the equity structure there is it's more a consumption tax as opposed to taxing people based on valuation of property. In theory, it hurts the poor less than other forms of taxation if you're just looking at how to generate the revenue. I don't know if you've had discussions. I look forward to trying to have discussions about some of those things. Just running for this office, these were a lot of things that I looked at. And also just development. I understand maybe a two-year, it takes a year or two before you approve something, before the build-out, and you start to realize some of the is it about a two-year term? So I realized that in the recession, buildings stopped. In fact, there's a lot of empty buildings, but we're seeing growth right now, at least last year. So I realize some of that's probably starting to kick in. We'll start to kick in the next year or two, and hopefully the increased revenue where we already have infrastructure will hopefully bring some more funds. So I just look forward to seeing the deep dive. I lean on the expertise and the of our staff and as well as the council, and I look forward to the process. If we have to arm wrestle a little bit, it's all right. If we have to do a little bit. So it sounds like maybe everyone's going to have to do some arm wrestling. Hopefully, that's a bad way to describe it, arm wrestling. Hopefully it's not like warfare, but I get it. It's tough. You know, there's so many resources. We were just at the meeting last week. It was the VRT, I think, and they're talking about $400 million for the next 20 years, meaning $20 million a year if you want a certain grade. So part of the debate is not just the quantity, but also sort of the subjective element of quality of service. And I know that mm-hmm. you get what you pay for, and what can we afford, and where are we going to prioritize? So I realize this is going to be a challenging time. I'm glad that we can have this discussion here rather than through an email chain. So but look forward to further discussion once we get more information and try to be the best stewards we can be. So
thank you. And you know, on the franchise fees, I had someone suggest that to me, and I asked some questions. And basically, needless to say, that's an increased cost to our citizens.
And
it would only go through on electric, and my understanding is that would have to go to a vote, that we could not do that without a vote. That's exactly what I was told.
Yeah, two-thirds, too, I think.
Yeah, and so I don't think the timing of that is realistic at all. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't count on those funds just because,
no.
Yeah, I think it's going to be tough. I think the key is that we all need to work together to get this done. We need to not be fighting on it. The goal is how can we be good stewards of the taxpayers' money and make decisions in the best interest of the people of this community? And as long as we all come into it with no personal motives, but only the motives of what's best for our community, then I think that we'll get where we need to go, and that's what we need to do. So I look forward to the discussion. You know what? We won't all agree, but that's good because not everybody agrees. So,
Madam Mayor, mm-hmm. Continued discussion. You've misrepresented some of the last 4 years. We've not kicked the can down the road on the streets. The streets hadn't been funded in a lot of ways for the past 10 years before 4 years ago. We've added significant amounts to the streets and have a 7-year plan to go around the city and take care of it. True, we need more. Whether we can do that or not, I don't know. And that's for discussion. But also, there was the PL that they leave. We didn't have any money set aside for that. Now we have a couple million set aside for that. We've been taking care of the infrastructure. Last year, we didn't get new personnel because we needed to take care of the infrastructure. So again, we can't have it all, but the council the last 4 years hasn't just been sitting on their hands. And on the crime stats you stated, I don't believe that. We're not that bad in crime compared to other cities. We haven't been declining in terrible crime and violent crime. There are less prosecutions going on, but we have to always fight it. And we've taken care of our police in the last 4 years. We've given them what they have asked for every time except for the number of cars, what actually comes before us. And I intend to keep supporting law enforcement. We have a good department with good morale. I want to keep that going. And still, the deep dives are a bit of a mystery. Is there a committee, a deep dive committee, or is it just you? Or
no, and I had sent that information to council back on the 20, I can't remember the date, but I've sent that out to council, the names of the deep dive committee. So it's an independent, I could show you the email. I sent it out, but you may have forgotten. So Dre Campbell is on the deep dive committee, Glenn Rimby, David Peterson, Deborah Curry, and Ken, I just forgot Ken's last name.
Keen,
thank you. So I think I have everybody. Did I miss somebody? Got it. Okay. So that's an independent citizen task force that is just sitting and listening. They're just listening and asking good questions and then helping us through the process.
Are any council members involved in the deep dive?
No, but this is for me as mayor of the city working with staff and getting a team to help support me to ask those questions. And so this is the time for me to learn about the city. And that's why I'm going to send it back. I will inform council. But this is for me to learn about the city and so that I can really understand it and for staff to get these deep dives put together. So, and we are presenting it, which I've already communicated, to council.
So the consensus of the council is we want a balanced budget presented. Is that what I'm hearing?
Mayor and Councilman Scott. I know for myself, at least I voted, that I was not ready to make any commitment to that effect until after I hear the deep dives, and I believe the people on my right were pretty much of the same statement.
I just want to know, are you going to some balanced budget? Is that what you're looking for?
That would be the ideal, but there again, I want to hear.
So we're making no decision?
Councilman Scoggin, I don't know how we can make a decision at this point in time. If it's the deep dives that is the concern, then that's discussion. Or if you want to change that up, or how the mayor's handling that. But as far as information, we don't have the information before us. And so whether that's accomplished through the deep dives or another process, I guess that's to be determined. Madam Mayor has decided that's how her process. So. I'm personally okay with her continuing that and having open communication with us and ASAP that we get some, as far as decisions and what recommendations are going to be.
Mayor Clinton,
you know me. I mean, I don't think I hide anything. I'm going to be as fiscally tough as possible on this. And I'm going to prioritize, but when I prioritize, I'm going to prioritize things that I think are the highest priority, and there's going to be some give and take. And I'm sorry, there's going to be some losers. There's winners and losers. But that's there again, that's my bias. So.
Mayor Quinn, can I ask, March 26th has been mentioned, it's not on my calendar. What is that date for and what time of the day is it?
Well, it would be actually at the will of the council on the time. We've been having some discussions about whether to split it into two times or just one. I think in our meeting this morning, I think we'll try to just do one. It would be, I think this group suggested not starting before 5. Is that correct?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a Monday evening. And so would you suggest 5:30? I want to do it at it. What?
We can do it at 5. That's fine. I mean, I'm selfish just because, you know, I'm working, so I want to make sure my employers...
Okay, why don't you come at 5, we'll come at 6, so we can have dinner.
It's going to be, we will try to get done in 3 hours. It could be 4. It'll be a push to get done in 3 hours, but we'll do our best. It'll be an all evening, because it's quite a bit of information.
When you say all evening, what do you mean by all evening?
Well, 3 hours to 4 hours.
That's
so
that's
if we start at 6, we'll be done at either 9 or 10.
Okay.
So
I
prefer 6?
5 o'clock is my preference.
I'd make a motion for 6.
Six.
Okay.
What is,
that's fine. I'm not going to fight.
And that is okay. For budget?
No, that's deep dive presentations.
Oh, okay, presentation of that.
Yeah.
Okay, so by then, we should be able to start giving some direction to the staff. That's only a couple of weeks away, so that should be fine.
Okay, so March 26, 6 p.m. here. And anyone else is welcome to come because it's an open public session. So we'll get it posted. So
remember, it's all night long, though.
Bring snacks,
if
we're allowed to eat in here, I'm not sure.
Madam Mayor,
yes.
Just briefly to respond to Councilman Scott's question. Has the budget been balanced the last 4 years?
That's what's been presented to
us.
How long, Becky?
At least 2 years.
The last 2 years were great.
The budget always has to end up balanced.
Yes.
But I think it's been presented balanced at least 2 years, maybe 3.
Yeah.
Yeah, 1 3-ring binder this big versus 2 this big.
I look forward to learning more.
Yeah, the larger ones were just too much. I took notes, read all 800 pages, and then when I got here, I couldn't even keep track of all my notes. So it was tough on all of us.
So Vicki will work with you in the process to ensure, because you have last year's experience and what was preferable. And we'll have more discussions about it. We'll talk further on the 26th on this topic, I'm sure.
Yes, Mayor and Council, I would just remind us that the state legislature is not done, and we have to make sure that they're finished before we are also able to make any decisions based on what they might do to us.
That is true. Is there any further discussion on this item?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. If not, okay, so we'll move on to item number 34. This is a discussion on whether to enter a long-term contract with Republic Services for sludge solid waste hauling. So, Bruce, I think this was yours that you asked to have on the agenda.
And for council members, we've been getting emails from some people about that. We brought it up a couple of years ago, but really didn't get deep into it, deep into sludge. So I just wondered if anybody was interested in having staff pursue that or not. This is for council, I'm asking. Or leave it as is. We can also, I think we have somebody here from Republic. Or not. We don't.
No, Michael could speak to it because he has done. I mean, not your full thing, but I think we've done research on this before, correct?
You're talking about 2 miles away from Nampa. Sludge away from Nampa. It goes to Mountain Home, or sometimes we use it and go out to the Pickle Butte, which we used to not be able to at all, is my understanding.
So does Kena still have capacity?
Could we have Michael speak to this issue? Okay, Michael.
For the mayor and council, not sure where this discussion started, but I can give you some information. Nate's put together something that's a study we did about 6-8 months ago. And here's our report. We're going to scramble to get this when we've seen it make it on the agenda. Let me make sure everybody gets a copy. Thank you. So, so also it's item appendix F of the facility plan. So those of you that I know that read the budget every page was also reading the facility plan every page, and so this entire section. But this is the long-term plan of the wastewater sludge hauling. We looked at Class A, also in sludge, found out that that's not prudent at this time, but as prices change. We have in this report staff, Nate and Andy from the wastewater plant had looked at this about 6-8 months ago. What we found is that we've been able to work closely with Pickle Butte. We have a pilot project going right now. Right now our costs are primarily we're going to Simcoe WIM landfill. Best thing about that is it gets through the gate and the sludge becomes their issue, their problem. We don't have that assurance. We don't have assurance from Pickle Butte that they will take the sludge. They've been working closely with us on a pilot project to see how they can handle it. We've also been informed by them that the rates will go up once they get done with their pilot study. Our projection is about $20 a ton. We're 23 to Simcoe. We're 14 today. The other thing is what we did is you have in there an evaluation we did on hauling. Right now we do use Republic as a short-term assistance. They haul it. It's about $300 haul. For them to haul it, we can do it for about $142 today. So makes sense that we keep doing what we've been doing. The tricky part is what we're not 100% certain on the future. In that study that's in Appendix I, as we get additional, likely we're doubling the volume of sludge that we will be handling. So I would say this is not the time to go for a long-term contract because the amount is going to go up in the future. So at that point, it even makes more sense for us to haul our own. And use our own trucks. The advantage that we have today with the short-term contract that we have with Republic is that the sludge truck is a non-critical vehicle, so it doesn't have to run 24/7. If we have a problem with the vehicle, which we just did, we're able to call on Republic. They haul it out for us on short-term. It's also something that we looked at before. We had our sludge hauler truck driver quit, so. Andy's been working on how best to use the right staff, minimize the. He hasn't filled the position because we're trying to figure the right mix, hire the right person, so we're still in that process. So, right now, it's a decision we made roughly 6 months ago not to pursue this option. And so that's kind of where we're at. I don't know where this came from or why it's here, but that's the answer. We don't. All the things that we choose not to do, we don't bring back to council.
Thank you.
Is that, are we good with that?
Yeah, appreciate the update.
Okay, so item number 55, deferral of paving for Todd Frera, DBA Dick's Car Corral, located at 3712 Garrity Boulevard. Robert, well, go on.
Yes. I don't know if Mr. Frera is here this evening. Robert couldn't be here and asked me to cover this, and I'm not sure I'm equipped to answer the questions. Apparently, he is, in the letter, he's indicated, I think you have each a copy of the letter that he provided. So I'm expanding my car lot onto the next neighboring lot that I have purchased at 3712 Garrity Boulevard. 3712 is his property here. So he apparently owned the property west, purchasing 3712, and we look at that as an expansion of a car lot, and that expansion area is not paved. Her portion of it is not paved. I believe the areas that are highlighted are not paved, as I understand. I'm not sure about the status of these. They almost look paved, but I don't know the answer to that, and I didn't have time to look that up since I learned this was on the agenda this evening. It says, because of the expense of purchasing and getting things in order, I was hoping to get a deferral on paving. And this is something the council has done previously, has deferred the requirement that be paved immediately. And so he's asking to have this completed within a 7-year period of time. to have the lot completely paved by March 1 of 2025. I don't know whether that's reasonable or unreasonable to wait that long. For him, it's what's reasonable for him to wait that long. The ordinance does indicate that if you're expanding into area, actually opening up new car lot area that isn't paved, we typically wouldn't require him to pave the area that may be deficient where it's already existing. But an expansion area that is deficient typically is required to be paved unless the council grants a deferral. So he's asking a deferral. So I can't really tell you exactly. I believe the area next to the 312 address that isn't being used is that small area out front that is seeking a deferral on paving. In any event, that's what his request is, and I guess it's up to you to decide how much of a deferral you want to give.
Mayor Plain. Norm, so the yellow areas are currently paved or not paved?
Not paved.
And he's looking to park vehicles on those areas?
I believe
areas.
So. Yes.
So the concern would be, again, oil leakage into the ground, not being able to be separated and removed, which your asphalt would give you. It would be channeled to collection boxes.
Now, the larger area to the west or to the northwest, that, I believe, is part of an existing car lot. And this is research I haven't got finalized in my own mind as to what area he's referring to as the expansion, the purchased lot that he's expanding onto. I believe it's that 312 on the south, the yellow area out front, that smaller area. The other area may not be paved, but it's kind of, I think, grandfathered because he's been selling the cars there now.
My only concern, again, is what EPA requirements are for car lots, and if we're superseding by saying it's all right to go ahead and park vehicles that are probably used vehicles that could be leaking oil, then we're creating a contaminated ground source by putting those cars on that portion of gravel and not being able to remove it like you would normally see, like in a parking lot. It's channeled, collected, and removed before it can get into the groundwater. So I would not be in favor of this simply because of the potential that we take on as a liability as a city by allowing it.
Mayor, I'm just going to make a motion, throw it out there. So I would move that we table this until our next council meetings, until a little more research and we know what's paid.
We know which property we're talking about
and
how
that's
much
my
is
motion.
Paved and how much is being
paid. I'll take it.
Is there any further discussion? We have a motion and a second.
Just a mayor question for Norm. Well, I guess we'll get it the next meeting. He says he'll do it within 7 years. Is there some sort of contractual obligation, fines, fees that would be assessed?
We can enter into a deferral agreement
and
state the time and the expectation.
There's no LID option of any sort where it could be done and he pays it back over 7 years?
What do we know?
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Sandy.
Yeah, Mayor. I appreciate your thought process, Councilman Hobbelbaum, and I have questions that I would want to reserve till the date that it's tabled. And did you say the next meeting? What was the date?
That's my suggestion. I think we certainly it's in town and close. We can certainly have that information, but I don't want to.
Yes.
I'm projecting it on
you. See that Robert gets that compiled for us.
Thank you.
Okay, so it's been moved and seconded that we table this motion until a further council meeting when we have more information. And unless is there any further discussion? Roll call.
Skog?
Yes.
Haverfield?
Yes.
Levi?
Yes.
Hogaboom?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Bruner?
Yes.
Okay, so we have one more item on the agenda, and that was the item that was added at the beginning, and that was the opportunity to discuss the appointment of an NDC commissioner. So was that a question about the process?
I just wanted to make a statement as we move forward with, because we can't make any decisions tonight, but just for consideration, we're losing from the NDC level. We have 5 current members on the NDC, 2 elected, 3 non-elected. The way the state statute reads is we can have up to 3 commissioners or not less than three commissioners, no more than nine. And then the breakdown has to be less elected officials on there. I think the main thing that I was going to ask for from, I know that you've sent out from the mayor's office a request for resumes. I would just request that we have an opportunity to review all resumes as they are responded back to you and a copy of the grading criteria that you're going to use. I think the other thing that I wanted to mention was we've had, with the loss of Jerry Smith, we're now down to four commission members. And with one meeting that we had one individual that didn't make it, so we were down to three commission members, which is a quorum, but we weren't able to go into executive session because you have to have four. So we might consider changing up the makeup from maybe instead of having five, looking at more, possibly six or seven, to keep that from happening a second time. So as we get, and again, what the statute says is as a council, we are to advise and to give consent to the the recommendation from the mayor's office. So to be able to have a look at the resumes, we might be able to give good feedback as to who would be good people to have on that commission. So that's what I would ask for.
Are you wanting to consider at this time actually increasing the number of commissioners?
I think that's what I would like to have out there on the table for consideration.
I would concur that I personally think it should be seven. So
yeah.
Okay. More community involvement, I think, the better, especially with NDC-type decisions.
So then we would end up with three open positions. We could go ahead and get one appointed because we began the process, and then we could maybe start again on that next process. Is that...
And the other thing I noticed on your, which you sent out for notice, it was open to anybody in the county. I would respectfully request that we look at only Napa City residents because there is a Canyon County Urban Renewal Board. And so we don't want to have, what we talk about at the county, or at the NDC level is related to city taxpayers. We want to make sure that we're representing them.
I agree with that. I think it just had to do with, by statute, it could be someone that lived in the county, so following the statute language, but I agree with the prioritization of someone that lives in our city limits that is brought into our community.
That would be, so that was my request as far as just for consideration tonight.
Yes, sir.
Madam Mayor and Councilmember Haverfield, the rest of the council, I only wanted to clarify one point, and I may have misunderstood what you said. The number of council members serving on the NDC, does that have to be less than the number of non-council members? It just can't be more. So if it's an even number, you can have up to half. If it's an odd number, then it needs to be one less. The advantage of having an odd number is less likely that there will be tie votes. But an even number simply means a tie vote is a no vote.
Right.
So okay.
So we could look at six if we wanted to. Now, what happens if an individual that's not elected doesn't show up to a meeting? And there's three elected. I mean, we can still go forward because of the makeup is still three and three.
Councilman Haverfield, that's an issue we haven't researched specifically. And as was noted in the special meeting this afternoon, Idaho Code doesn't always give us clear guidance. From the hip, conclusion would be that absolutely you could proceed forward. The references in the code limiting the number of council members on the board speak to the organization of the board, and to my knowledge, none of those references speak specifically to an individual meeting.
Oh, okay.
So it would be my recommendation that we do not increase the council members on the board, that we get citizens on the board, because we have the opportunity to be elected and sit at this bench, that it's an opportunity to have citizens represented on NDC. And so... is there any other discussion? Then at that, I would stand for a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good job.
I know. You guys won. If it hadn't been for NDC, we would have been nine.